Take a network break. Welcome to episode 37. Grab a coffee, a donut, and join us for an analysis of the latest IT news, vendor moves, and new product announcements. We'll separate the signal from the noise, or at least make some noise of our own. I'm Drew Connery Murray, and with me as always is Greg Farrow and Ethan Banks. So let's get right into it. The big news of the week, Uncle John stepping down as CEO from Cisco.
Yeah, John Chambers, 20-something years at the top. People have never, I think, basically it was the founders and then John Chambers was CEO and we've never known anything different. The end of an era, some people say.
Yes. Well,
long overdue, most people say.
You should tell people why you call him Uncle John. It's a good little backstory.
Oh, yes, of course. Uncle John, I call him, he's my rich Uncle John. Everybody needs a rich uncle to help them in lives. And, of course, 15 years ago when I finally passed by CCIE and, you know, even before then as a Cisco engineer, my entire career has been built and my personal wealth has been built on Cisco equipment. And knowing about it and configuring it and selling it to customers and generally transferring wealth from their pockets to mine, which has been wondrous. So I like to see John Chambers as my rich Uncle John because he's the man who made all that possible.
Exactly. Many of us have the same story.
Wealth transfer from customers to my pocket.
But he's been a real figurehead, a leader, you know, kind of the voice of Cisco in a lot of regards, not just for analysts, but also to the community, to networkers. At Cisco Live, he would meet with the net vets, those that show up at the Cisco Live conferences with frequency, and he's really tries to interact with everybody and keep his finger on the pulse of what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's been a real... Well, he's been a polarizing figure in some ways in that, you know, he's always done that. He's always been the person that he is focusing on productivity. Remember when he had that period where he was being a politician and he was running around meeting the heads of state, like he met the head of China and sat down with George Bush and used to go to the conferences in Europe and walk on a world stage and then think, you know, the business didn't go so well. And so all of a sudden he's back to business. So... he's been through so many different things, but ultimately Cisco's are, you know, really facing some challenges now because of the changes in the networking market, like convergence, you know, as networking becomes a part of servers or built into storage. You know, the old silos where networking was over here and storage is over here and servers are over here. Now that we have this hyper-convergence thing where companies like Nutanix and EMC are taking away, you know, the V-block stuff, are showing that people don't want to buy a separate network from the servers. And that's why Cisco's into UCS. And, you know, that's a massive change for Cisco internally.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm wondering if Cisco is going to, I mean, with the change here at the top, well, there's some doubt about how much change there really is, but let's presume that there's some, you know, the leadership change here with Chuck Robbins coming into this new role. What does that do for Cisco? One of the things that we've been somewhat critical of Cisco about, Greg, is the fact that they, well, a couple of things. You know, one is just all the different business units that even compete against each other, meaning Cisco doesn't have a unified strategy across the company. There are a lot of different business units with their own strategies doing things. And then just not a lot of...
coherence?
I want to say technical leadership. I mean, because there is some of that. Certainly, there's still a lot of incredibly smart engineers and some leadership there. But it seems to be very much about preserving the business model and not adapting very well to a lot of the changes that we see in the market, like white box switching, something we're going to talk about a little bit later in this show, and so on. Does Chuck Robbins bring anything new to the equation?
I saw a tweet from Ben Stricker, who works in PR at Cisco, and he joked that there was white smoke coming from one of the Cisco buildings on campus, like when they announce a new pope. And I at first I thought, oh, that's cute, but then I thought there's actually kind of a lot of parallels you could draw between Cisco as an organization and the Vatican. You know, sort of a giant institution, a legacy way of doing things, trying to survive and stay relevant in a culture that's changing around them. And so, you know, do you go with, you know, the previous pope, who was a Benedict, who was sort of a hardline conservative, or do you go with someone like the current Pope Francis, who is sort of perceived as more of a more liberal, trying to take it a little bit of a new direction, maybe change the culture a little bit. I don't know what we're going to see from the new guy.
Well, they said in the press release, if you look at the Cisco press release, it said Well, sorry, that's not true. The Cisco press release said it's basically going to be more of the same. And if you look at some of the articles, which I've linked to, what you know from various people like Tom Nolley, eWeek, Network World, and Network Computing, the general consensus is it's more of the same. That Chuck Robbins, who's the successor, is a sales and operations specialist. So he's been heading up the sales and operations part of the business for the last 4 or 5 years. And basically he's managed to sustain Cisco sales. And I would imagine that if I was Cisco's board and I'm looking at things like, you know, Cisco has a $10 billion business unit focused on selling video in the service provider network. But nobody wants to see video in the network. They want to watch Hulu and Netflix and, you know, Amazon Prime video services and stuff like that. Those businesses are under threat. So the fact that Cisco's been able to sustain sales across all the portfolios where there's competition, you know, campus, enterprise LAN, enterprise data center, service provider, it's been quite a thing, right? And Cisco's share price is nervously staying where it is because nobody really believes that Cisco can continue to fight the battle on all fronts. So he's going to focus on sales, where sales means more salespeople kicking down your door and burning shoe leather, air miles, and car tires to get more sales, ask for purchase orders and stuff like that.
Yeah, but one comment there about the sales model. You can ramp up salespeople and sales staff and try to drive up numbers in that way, but you can only sell what you got. And if what Cisco's current portfolio, which is still selling well, but if their current portfolio doesn't last for the long term, that is not a long-term growth strategy at all.
What Cisco's never – well, Cisco – so the second part of this equation is operations. So he's an operations specialist, and there was a quote in one of the articles where John Chambers was saying – you've made a lot of changes, you've reduced a lot of staff, you know, something like 10 to 20% of the senior executives have been booted out of the company, made redundant, they've shed 10% of the staff in various business units. And he said, what do you think about that? And he said, if I'm looking back, I was too soft, I should have done it sooner and I should have gone more. Are you attending the Open Networking User Group conference in New York on May the 13th? Or maybe you're just in New York on May the 13th. Ethan and I will be moderating a discussion about the software-defined WAN in an ONUG after our session on May the 13th. That's Wednesday next week. The format is food and a live podcast with network architects from big companies like Visa, Gap, and Bloomberg. And we're going to be talking about their real-world SDN experiences and discussing their issues around the deployment designs and the outcomes for their companies. Now, this event is sponsored by Viptela, a software-defined WAN company who can really change the way your WAN bandwidth and WAN performance works. And we thank them for sponsoring this event, but you have to head over to Viptela to register for this event. We need the numbers for catering and seating. And thanks to Viptela for sponsoring the event and the recording of the show. Operations means reducing costs. That means a few things. It means reducing headcount further. It means kicking out long-term employees, so you reduce the liabilities that long-term employees build up, like annual leave and have benefits and stuff like that. So you push them out the door and take the hit, get them off the books. You reduce costs by screwing your suppliers and expect resellers to get screwed even harder as well. So, you know,
that's all from a financial perspective. That is all new paint on an old building. They got to do some renovations, I think, with some of the products. You know, I look at UCS and go, just as a thing, how well is unified communications going to continue to do in the enterprise as communications model change? I don't have a strong prediction there. I'm just curious about that. How many enterprises are going to need that? You know, the switching market we know is radically changing.
Chuck's not an innovator, right? He's not an innovator. He was selected not to be an innovator. There were other executives who were seen as more innovative. But, you know, John Chambers has implemented what he calls a fast follower strategy for 10 years or more, which is he waits to see what customers are buying, and then he goes and buys the company that makes it. So classic example, Carradine. Carradine is doing MPLS path analysis. It was a successful company. He saw the writing on the wall, and he went and bought a company and brought it in. Then he looked at TailF's NCS and said, you know, we need that in the service provider space. More importantly, TailF is one of our biggest competitors in the AT&T and Verizon account. We need to get our hands on that. So Cisco's never been an innovative company, not since the mid-80s when they invented routers at low cost. Cisco is a fast follower. I'm not sure you should expect Cisco to be innovative. It actually should be slow, boring, dull, tedious.
Right, and that's obviously been a successful strategy, and it seems like they're banking on that. But I do think there's also opportunities where Cisco sees potential for growth. I'm thinking in the wireless space and in the IoT space, where you know new products, new technologies are coming online that are going to create bandwidth network demands, and they're sort of watching to see how the market shakes out and how they can leverage it.
Mm. Cisco's not an innovative company, but the flip side of a fast follower strategy is in a time of great change, Ethan. I think you struggle to look relevant. You may lose your ability to say, in the technology market particularly, if you're not producing the latest and greatest and seen as leading some of these changes, you risk being, you know, looking like a stale old fuddy-duddy, and people don't look to you first, they look to you last, and it will lose some of its loyalty.
Well, that's an element. There's also the element of the, you know, the big profit margins that they tend to work on. Again, going back to the switching market, that's one of their standbys for a long time. Lots of revenue generation from switching because of the margins that they operate at, which is a key thing under threat here from white box and to some degree bright box, and they've been very staunchly opposed to open networking and to white box switching, and they, at least not officially, there's been no...
Okay, let me defend Cisco there. They're not staunchly opposed, but they're not embracing it wholeheartedly.
Sure, why would they?
Well, it goes against their whole business model currently, right, you know, of vertical integration. So they would need to see value in their operating systems and be willing to separate them and sell them as unique, discrete components that customers could choose to use. But that goes against pushing metal out the door.
It does. But the flip side of it is you look at Open Daylight and how much code Cisco's contributed to Open Daylight. And OpenStack, Cisco's a huge contributor to the OpenStack project, because Intercloud's built on it. You know, there are a number of open, you know, they've given, TailF is being given away. Cisco contributes to a lot of open source projects. It's not like they're totally not into open source, but I agree with you in principle. Cisco does tend to take open technologies, it embraces them, and then it puts proprietary extensions on them, so it extinguishes the openness within them. Embrace, extend, extinguish. That's a fairly standard strategy for Cisco, and they've done that for so long, it's very hard to believe that Cisco is actually open. Like, OSPF, the classic one that everybody will know, is, you know, stubby areas, totally stubby areas, and not so totally stubby areas, or whatever the hell they all are now. They're all proprietary modes. Embrace, extend, extinguish.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if there is any significant change here. I mean, another point worth making is, you know, the market is still bearing out Cisco's strategy. It's not like their numbers are falling off dramatically and things are looking, you know, desperate or far from it.
But Cisco's share price has been flat for a decade. It's been running around a 25%, you know, at the current share price. If you look at it over a decade, there's been no share price growth, but the company has grown overall. Its capital value is up. They've been issuing more shares. So although the share price is flat, the capitalized value has grown fairly steadily from a $20 billion to $100 billion company. So people are happy with that. They announced the dividend that sustained the share price, even though it should probably be falling in the current market, because they're handing out a tight and tidy little 4% to 5% dividend to investors. So, I mean, for me, all I see is a Cisco that's going to put more salespeople on the street, which is a waste of time, in my opinion, because nobody wants salespeople. What we want is sales engineers who can help us design and solve problems. And they're going to get rid of more people. So operationally, they're going to cut heads. They're going to get rid of businesses. Hopefully, they get rid of some of those products you talk about. Too many.
That's a presumption on what we believe Chuck Robbins' track record to be. So, you know, we'll see. It's going to be an interesting 6 to 12 months, certainly.
Mm.
Yeah, for sure. Be interesting to see how it shakes out. Another story, Arista and Infinera become friends.
This is good fun. Arista's, you know, needs to grow. It's got a massive valuation in its share price and, you know, its valuations. And the chassis market, it seems to be slowing down a little bit. So customers aren't necessarily buying quite as many Ethernet chassis switches as they used to, because when you do 10 gig, you don't need as many ports, and you can get a hell of a lot. And we'll talk more about the new Broadcom Tomahawk switches coming out shortly. But, you know, there are 1RU switches that can deploy like 96 40 gig ports. At that point, how many people actually need chassis? So Arista needs to do something to extend its marketing, and doing a deal with Infinera. So Infinera is a Metro Ethernet or DWDM business. They manufacture products that do DWDM gear using intelligent transport and all that sort of stuff. But they don't do any IP. You have to go and put a something on the edge. So for Arista to put its chassis on the edge of an Infinera box makes good sense. They might be able to transition their product into a Metro Ethernet, which is a market that Avaya in particular is very strong in, and Alcaliv. So, yep, a sign that Arista is trying to stretch out away from the enterprise and stabilize its business model and grow into some new markets.
Mm-hmm. Do you see that there's a lot of growth there?
It's possible. Service provider businesses require long lead times. You're talking a 2 to 5 year sales cycle to often get these things together. So, I mean, I'm very cynical about these, you know, when you partner up, because I've seen cycles of this pretty solidly over 25 years in IT, and the partnerships never work out. So, you know, if you were a Dell customer and you'd been buying Aruba Wireless, and then suddenly HP buys Aruba, you'd be pretty PO'd right about now. Because now the reason you're buying it from Dell was to buying it from one place, and now Aruba's over here and they're friends with this. So I don't put much weight behind these partnerships. I think it's generally a waste of time. But I think one thing to be interesting is that, you know, Arista's press release says, we're doing high capacity, high performance Metro Cloud networking. We can connect your enterprise to the Metro Cloud. And the Infinera press release says, low latency data center and financial networking.
Well, it's interesting. I was kind of wondering as I read the review on this solution, who's going to sell this thing? Who's going to push this out the door? Is there mutual interest on both Arista's and Infinera's customer base that both sales teams would want to be selling this thing, or is it a little more one-sided? You know, just by way of comparison, mm-hmm. Dell has partnered with a bunch of open networking vendors, right? Well, if you talk to a Dell rep about, say, their partnership with Big Switch, you might have to dig a little bit to find someone within the Dell organization that actually knows about the Big Switch product. Mm-hmm. Does Dell have a lot of incentive to sell that solution? You know, I'm not sure. Arista and Infinera, do you have an opinion on that?
No, Arista, you become buddies. It's like EMC partnering with Supermicro this week and, you know, all these things that are going on, Cisco, and like Cisco's got a partnership with Microsoft, and it's got another one with NetApp, and it's got, you know, these things always, if you bet too much, if you're betting your business on that partnership being successful, you're nearly always going to come a cropper.
Exactly.
That's what I'm saying. So, you know, just because they're holding hands and having kisses, you know, like there's a big difference between a date and a marriage. And
so right now they're just dating.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
Facebook status, it's complicated.
Maybe even less. Maybe just friends with benefits.
All right, I'm going to leave that one there. Cisco selling Whitebox or Brightbox to Facebook. This is coming from the Reno report.
This is quite. I don't quite know what to make of this, but let's just spit it out. This Reno report is often controversial and fairly out there, and this time he's saying that someone from Cisco managed to shift a substantially sized order of Nexus 3000s into Facebook for their network. And he goes on to say that it's all based on scuttlebutt and rumor. There's no evidence, of course, naturally. Nobody talks about these things. But the switches will be running FBOS. They won't be running Cisco's iOS. And so logically, Cisco now has a white box or a bright box, branded white box strategy, or a white brand strategy, as I prefer to call it, a white brand strategy of selling Nexus 3000s to cloud providers who want low-cost switches to run their own operating systems on.
So why would you go to Cisco if you were trying to go low-cost?
End of quarter. Salesman's having some troubles meeting the numbers. Maybe I've got a warehouse full of Nexus 3000s that nobody's bought and I can dump.
They want to look good for the new CEO?
You know, it's a bit like the pound store. You know, like the dollar store down the bottom that sells the leftover, like the almost out of end-of-life stuff?
Yeah.
I can't help but wonder if, like, you know, oops, we overordered the 3Ks. I wonder where we can get rid of a couple of thousand of them.
<You know>? I think the big thing here, this is all rumor. I mean, it's not an official strategy, and Cisco's not going to acknowledge it, and Facebook wouldn't either in any official capacity that we're aware of. It's an interesting story. It just doesn't make sense in a lot of ways. I don't know.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting. You know, if we get any more evidence to back it up, we'll probably revisit it. But not enough evidence to convince me it's true. But if so, I can't help but, even if it is true, I can't help but wonder if it's a one-off.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. All right, we'll see if anything.
Well, unless the Nexus 3000 has got some hardware magic inside it that we don't know about, like that low latency feature that Cisco promotes in the 3500. But my understanding is that's just a Broadcom chip feature, but maybe that's what Facebook's looking for.
Yeah. All right. Some more news. HP is selling a 51% stake in its H3C networking business to China, or to some Chinese interests.
Yes. So my reading on this is HP has a couple of business networking business units. The H3C is the enterprise business unit. And the change in the way that Chinese politics works is that they don't want to have US-owned firms selling strategic products in the country. So HP has been working through a process for several months to sell a 51% stake in the H3C, that's the HP 3Com networking business unit in China, to a buyer. And apparently there's now been multiple firms now bidding for that asset. It's very popular to buy American networking firms in China, apparently.
Yeah, why? I mean, if China's got Huawei and some other homegrown networking companies, what's the interest here?
Well, HP wants to sell networking kit to China.
It's sure.
A massive growth market. Cisco's been frozen out. They don't look like they're going to do a deal in, you know, to sell half their business. You sell a majority stake in their business to China. Seems highly unlikely.
Yes.
There might be smoke coming up out of the Vatican, but.
It's not because they're burning the place down.
No, that's exactly. Well, it probably would be if they sold half of. There'd be a yeah. whole lot of U.S. Department of Defense contracts that would suddenly go. I think there's rules in. You know, they can't. It's one of those things for Cisco. You can't. What are they going to do? They would lose a lot of business in the U.S., but they need growth in China to be sustainable. So, you know, just the fact that people are competing for this business. We saw Alcatel-Lucent Enterprise, their whole enterprise switching and routing arm, that sold to a Chinese venture capitalist. There are several data networking businesses. Keep in mind that data networking is a massively profitable market segment. Cisco's average profit margin in the enterprise is 80% gross, up to 90% in some products. So if I was a venture capitalist, I'd be going, I can buy a business for this much. I can sell products at that profit margin. I am so into that. Mm-hmm. So that's where it is. Okay. And HP, of course, gets to sell. It gets half of a business in China, which is better than zero business in China.
Yes, that is true. Definitely market potential.
I'd like to welcome one of our sponsors today, the Open Networking Summit, ONS. ONS is the pioneering and premier SDN and NFV conference designed to foster a productive dialogue around the opportunities, challenges, and key developments in the quickly evolving world of SDN and NFV. They bring together the networking ecosystem of end users, engineers, business leaders, and researchers to discuss the possibilities and shape the future of the networking industry. This year, ONS 2015 is held June 14th through 18th in Silicon Valley, California, and features an expanded program developed to provide networking professionals with pragmatic information on SDN today, as well as providing direction to further innovation taking place in the industry. Focus of this year's conference is on education, sharing of experiences and best practices, thought leadership, and vision for the future. Participants will not only benefit from watching and listening to presentations and panel discussions, but also will contribute to discussions to advance the SDN industry. ONS 2015 program features 3 keynotes, 3 panels, 3 plenaries, and 9 tracks, and covers use cases and deployment experiences across service providers, enterprises, cloud, and data centers. To view detailed conference program, distinguished speakers, and to register, visit www.opennetsummit.org. Use discount code PACKETPUSHERS to get a 15% discount on registration. One more time, that's www.opennetsummit.org. Use discount code PACKETPUSHERS to get a 15% discount on registration.
All right, so now we're going to try something we're calling Rapid Fire, where we're going to do some quick hits on some interesting news that popped into our inboxes. And Ethan, you pulled out something from Gartner about it's not just cloud and hyperscale companies that are interested in SDN.
The Midsize Enterprise Summit happened here recently. This comes from Andrew Lerner's blog on Gartner.com. And the MES is a gathering of mid-market CIOs. Now, we talk a lot about hyperscale and web scale kind of companies driving a lot of things that are going on in SDN. Well, These people are also interested in hyperconverged infrastructure and in SDN as well, specifically VMware NSX, which makes sense because a lot of these shops run VMware. And so if they're interested in doing network virtualization, NSX is a really strong play there. If they want to do network virtualization or, say, service insertion dynamically. So it's an interesting market that I think gets forgotten a lot about, the mid-market, because it's not where all the trendy, exciting things are happening. Yet it's an absolutely massive market, billions and billions of dollars. And the technology that's at the top is going to trickle down into the mid-market and represent dollars. Lots of deals with smaller numbers attached to them, but still billions of dollars worth of sales that that we all need to pay attention to and not forget about.
Sure. Okay. Like I've always said, whatever happens in the big clouds can always be scaled down and be useful in the enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
So everything, things that getting products smaller is easy. Scaling products up is hard. So if Amazon's going to, Google invented containers, and then suddenly people worked out how to invent containers, we got Docker. Now Docker's being packaged down into VMware. Big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Everything big gets small, and that's why public cloud will ultimately be disrupted by private cloud.
Okay. another piece from Ethan: load balancing is cool again.
Yeah, this also comes from Andrew Lerner's blog on Gartner.com. He's making a point that as he is dealing with customers, NGINX, HA Proxy, and some other open source products for load balancing are getting deployed rather a lot for large cloud providers. So rather than an F5 or an A10, something that you pay big, big dollars for and has lots of rich features and bells and whistles, you want something in a web scale environment that can be automated, that you can use in a scale out architecture. And they've been turning to these solutions here. And it's just interesting that these kind of ADCs are showing up, as it kind of makes the idea here is that it kind of makes load balancing cool again. There's kind of interesting work being done in this space. So, the question to ask yourself as someone who might be an ADC consumer, you've got an F5 sitting in the rack or a bunch of them, do you need all the functionality that's in that big box, or are there open source solutions you might be able to leverage in your environment that that would get the job done? And it all depends on what you need. A lot of the L4, simple L4 load balancing is good enough. Cisco came up with their Intelligent Traffic Director solution that does L4 load balancing inside of Nexus chipset. Interesting. If you need the rich L7 functionality, then maybe you do need a fancy ADC. But there are other solutions out there that web scale people are using that maybe the mid-market again could be using. So interesting.
I think load balance is becoming a commoditized product. So the days of, going out to the special blessed F5 LTM is passing, and basically you just buy something. And I think especially when we get to NFV, we're going to see a lot more Nginx and HAProxy for horizontal scale, because it doesn't make sense to buy a customized load balancing product.
You just brought to mind another briefing that I was on with Soha Systems, who's in the security space. We talked a little bit about Soha last time. And baked into their product is some rudimentary load balancing. It's even better than rudimentary. I mean, there's some fancy stuff you can do there. And it's not an add-on. It's just part of the package.
Embrain was doing this 5 years ago. And now Embrain's been acquired by ACI, so that functionality is being included as a software load balancing function in ACI. And Avid Networks and a bunch of others have all built it into their platforms.
But it just speaks to your point that it's commoditized. It's almost, you can just count on this functionality being there, and it's not necessarily something that's, rich value and, the blessed F5, as you put it.
Yes, indeed.
Although also to say, when you're talking about open source, you also have to keep in mind that it's not just about the tool set, it's about the operations around it. And if you're a large service provider, you probably have the internal talent to maintain and manage and run open source tools. Whereas if you're a mid-size enterprise.
As we scale down, so the thing about NFV is you would just have one HAProxy for one function. Mm-hmm. So it's a very simple, easy to use, easy to maintain. So, but today when you deploy a physical load balancer, you might have 50 to 75 services on it, and you have a complexity problem at that point. So you've got to change your role, and that's the challenge.
Yep.
So it is actually definitely possible. It's much easier and far, far cheaper, but easy to manage and operate. It's not as complicated as you think.
Hmm. Okay. Some news around the Broadcom Tomahawk chipset rollout.
Yeah, so Broadcom Tomahawk is the new chipset that Broadcom bought out, which is the next generation to the Trident. I'm not 100% sure on the code names. I haven't seen anything that spells them all out yet, which has been annoying. And Broadcom is still secretive about releasing any of its information, so it's hard. But last week when we were at Interop, we saw Dell Z9100, which is the very first white brand product of the – it's not a white brand, but it uses the Broadcom Tomahawk. Z9100ON, high performance. It does 10 gig, 25 gig, 40 gig, 50 gig, and 100 gig on every port. It's a 1RU top of rack box, and basically there's a bunch of QSFP connectors. I think it's 32 QSFPs across the front. Is that right? And any of the, 32 ports, and any of those ports can be, those 32 QSFPs can break out into 32 ports of 100 gig, 64 ports of 50 gig, 32 ports of 40 gig, 128 ports of 25 gig, or 128 ports of 10 gig. That's a 1RU.
Dell claims that's going to be a fairly inexpensive switch as well, so I think the Tomahawk chipset might be useful in driving down the cost of 100 gig and making it more accessible to everyone.
Yep. It's worth noting that HP's also released a Tomahawk, or announced that they'll have a Tomahawk switch in the near future, which will do almost the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
HP also announced some new campus switches.
Yeah, everybody's getting boned up about NBASE-T, as if putting power over Ethernet is a big deal, because we need the new Wave 2 access points, the 802.11ac Wave 2 that do multi-gigabit. You can't just have 1 gigabit ports going down, so they've invented 2.5 and 5 gig Ethernet, which is dumb. We really need power over fiber optic.
Okay. And some news coming out of Extreme Networks. They were touting some SDN deployments, customer SDN deployments. And this touches on your point, Ethan, about the action in the mid-market and smaller companies.
Yeah, so Extreme, they haven't been making a lot of noise lately, but they had this this press release that their One controller, which is based on Open Daylight, is now being used in some customer deployments, and they've cited the town of Enfield, Connecticut. For those of you not in the U.S., Connecticut is a state up in the northeast region of the U.S., and Mount Mary University, they've deployed the controller. They are on an Extreme or potentially legacy Enterasys gear. And their use case is pretty straightforward. They bought this for, not because, ooh, it's SDN. They bought it for to do an application, and they're citing Skype for Business, formerly known as Microsoft Link, as and Dynamic QoS as the use case. The idea being, if you're running Link and you have two endpoints that need to talk to each other, the SDN controller knows about this from Link and will build an end-to-end QoS path for you so that that call has good quality without you as an engineer having to go and build all of these things manually, which of course is you're always chasing yourself trying to get the QoS policies right. This does it dynamically. And you know, the point being, it's an application-driven thing. It's not these guys bought SDN because they wanted SDN. They bought SDN because it could do something useful, and they were buying the useful thing. And that, I think, is where mid-market is going to really make its claim on SDN. They're going to buy it because there's something useful that it does for them.
Yeah, yeah. Applications are going to push SDN into the mid-market.
Yeah.
They've got to be smart. All right, and some news from Cumulus Networks.
So Cumulus briefed me a week or so ago about a couple of announcements. One, they've announced a rack management platform. And what this is all about is the fact that in a lot of these SDN networks, you've got an out-of-band, well, a lot of networks just in general, you've got an out-of-band control network, the network that you use to configure the switches, so that if you, you know, rather than in-band configuration where if you do it wrong, you can cut yourself off from that that device. You usually run an out-of-band network to do that control. Okay, so Cumulus has said we're building a rack management platform, which is essentially out-of-band switches that are managed the same way as you would handle any other of your Linux-based switches. So if you need to manage them and set them up and you know, and do things with them, you can use the same operational scheme that you use today. And they said this, customers were asking them for this. Hey, we want to manage our out-of-band network like we manage our regular switch fabric. You know, give us a solution, and that's the solution. And there's other things that it does for you too. In there. And it's not just that you manage with the rack management platform the network, the out-of-band network. You can also manage other devices hanging off of that network as well, servers and so on. So interesting there from Cumulus to get into that space. And then also from Cumulus is they have a relationship with Supermicro. So Supermicro is now going to provide a Cumulus Linux ready switch. The Supermicro model number is an SSE X3648S. And you can get that with Oni loaded on it and then integrate Cumulus Linux on top. So the number of white box or bright box brands that you can get Cumulus Linux on continues to grow, Supermicro being a pretty big brand that's out there.
Mm-hmm. Which is good, right? Because Cumulus is sort of, in one sense, they're building into their core competency around cloud people who want DevOps and scale. So Supermicro is very much into those cloud companies, especially the mid-sized cloud providers. They're buying Supermicros by the way. But having a some features just for the out-of-band network, I can't tell you how valuable that is. Because normally you're going and buying some, you go and get some 10/100/1 gig switch, and you using last year's, you know, the stuff that's been rotting at the back of the cupboard for the last 5 years, and you turn those into your out of band, and it really never works out well, and you're never happy with your out of band network. So I'm be very keen to see more about that.
Yeah.
All right, I think that wraps up our show, guys. Where can we find you this week?
You can find me at ethancbanks.com, my blog, and on Twitter at ecbanks.
And you can find me in New York next week at the Open Networking Users Conference. Viptela is sponsoring us to be there. I can't wait to stand up and record a show talking about the SDN WANification of the enterprise WAN. I'm quite looking forward. How about you, Mr. Banks? How do you feel about New York?
I am looking forward to that. Onoog will be good, and dinner with Viptela hosting the event. I mean, supposedly there's going to be 60, 70 people in the room, and we've got some really interesting network architects to come in and chat with us about their real world SD-WAN challenges and how the deployments are starting to look.
Yeah, it's nothing like finding a few victims. People to tell their stories. So that's going to be pretty good fun. It's going to be something we haven't done before. I mean, we've done some pretty weird things as packer pushers, but doing a dinner dance thing, is it dinner dance? Is that too weird?
Yeah, you better get on my card, man. You haven't signed up yet.
Ethan fills up early.
Yeah, yeah. That's because he can't handle it. He pikes. yeah, that's going to be fun. I think I'm really looking forward to that. Something really unique, you know, a way for us to record. And more importantly, Viptela is also sponsoring a recording of the show, which will be published over on the weekly feed sometime in the next few weeks. So do, if you are in New York next week, come and join us. You'll be able to find a link to the Viptela sign-up site there.
So you guys were together all last week at Interop. You're hanging out together this week around Ethan's place, and next week you're in New York. When do you guys get tired of each other?
Every day?
So far, surprisingly, it's been good. It's been really good. We think we should do it more often.
Yeah, it's Packet Pushers is growing. You'll see more about this in the next few weeks. We'll start talking more about the future of Packet Pushers and how we think we might have something good here.
All right. Well, I also want to thank both of you for spending so much time at Interop. I think the show came off well. People were happy with the content, and that's partly due to the work you guys put in, so thank you. And folks, if you're interested, you can find me on the Twitters at interop_Andrew, or head over to Information Week and see my blog there. And that wraps it up.